you concerned Christians about how we live our lives as Christians today. Each of us is, in a sense, called by the church, called by Christ to serve our neighbors. The two greatest commands are summarized, the two commandments summarized by Christ are love God above all things and love your neighbor as yourself. And in this world of hatred and bigotry, how do we do that? If we see somebody suffering, we are to respond to that person. If we see something that causes suffering in people, we are to respond to that cause of suffering. And from that we get the concept of vocation, not just career, not just job, but vocation, or which comes from a Latin word meaning to call or being called. In effect, called to minister to others. I just stole this poster from the dining room for the evening. I don't know who put it there. It's from Southeast Pennsylvania Synod of LCA. It's all of God's people in all places at all times are called to minister, and then describes minister, to give aid or service. And then it lists jobs: acrobat, airline pilot, artist, accountant, animal trainer, anthropologist, applesauce maker, Afghan knitter, and author, actor, auctioneer, athlete, acolyte, down the list, roofer, realtor, repair technician, reflexologist, I don't know what that is. rescue worker, and so a very beautiful thing that expresses very well the concept of Christian vocation. And here at Holden, village that works on volunteer occupations, we see how every occupation is necessary. Garbologists, if we didn't have them to dispose of our waste in a sound, environmentally sound manner, the Forest Service would not let Holden exist. The cooks, without them, we wouldn't be eating. We all rely on each other as a community, and as such, in a similar sense, we as a society rely on each other. And people, I mean, we often think of people, we make a very clear effort to remind ourselves that people are called to, I don't want to use the words Christian ministry, because as this points out very well, we're all Christian ministers, but to parish pastors, we specifically issue a call. And in another sense, a broader sense of the term, we are all called in our own occupations. And some people, most of the people in this room, look like they're at the stage where they've already picked a job or a career, or are some stage along in that way, and not at the stage where they are still deciding what they want to be, quote, be in life. Though we don't decide what we want to be in life till we're done with life, then we can look back and here's what we chose to do. But I'd suggest that our Christian vocation can come to us both in our jobs, in the jobs that we do at the time, whether we're a teacher or a pastor or any one of these things, a kennel worker. I mean, how do you express your Christian calling as a kennel worker? Perhaps by humane treatment of animals, perhaps by caring about what you're doing, not just sweeping out the cages the way you have to, but doing it as carefully and conscientiously as you can. Perhaps that's what you can see the word calling as. And some of us, some people in service occupations very clearly can see their calling. If you're working with mentally retarded adults, treating them with human dignity and compassion, it's very easy to see how Christian is called to do a good job there. Some others, it may not be as clear. But we don't only see a vocation as our job or our career. Many of us have vocations in our volunteer work. We volunteer for organizations, and many people who see their jobs as rather meaningless would say that their main vocation may be what they do in their spare time as volunteers. Some people do it after their careers. You may have been the woman who made the comment at Howard Olson's talk on, it was about myths about seniors, but the suggestion was that when people retire, especially with early retirement nowadays, the concept is you've done your life's work, and now, I think your phrase is, now is it really that you're supposed to have a 25-year vacation? And I thought that was a very interesting way to put it. And one sense, I mean, the way our society is set up, yes, you are expected to relax and enjoy the fact that you've contributed for so long, but on the other hand, the suggestion was that maybe that's part of the vocation too. Now you've got more free time. You don't have to use it all in service to others, but maybe you don't want to be, maybe it's not in your best interest either to be on a 25-year vacation, and you can find other things to do. Some people pick their career specifically because they see it as a calling or a vocation. Some people, in the midst of their career, see all of a sudden they feel called to something else and change because they feel they can serve others more. These days we see much more career changing. A lot of people, for instance at seminary, they say almost half the seminary students now at Lutheran seminaries are not the quote traditional, just out of college seminarians, but people who mid-career, midlife, are going back, whether to become parish pastors or just because they want the additional theological training, I'm not sure, but half the seminaries are there. You see that people are getting a calling in the middle of their life. And at every stage of life, then, I think we have an opportunity to use this calling. Now, what do we do in this calling? As Christians who are to love our neighbors in a world of injustice, there are many things. The Bible spells out a number of them specifically. We're supposed to feed the hungry, clothe the naked. It's very clear that we're supposed to provide others with some human dignity. We're supposed to protect human rights. I think it's fair to say that we should be helping the unemployed to get jobs. We ought to be befriending the lonely, helping those who have gone astray in drugs or committing crimes or so on, helping them to work their way back into mainstream of law-abiding citizenship. We're supposed to work to bring peace to the nations. We're supposed to bring peace in households where there's abuse and other violence. We're supposed to try and do our best to help the victims of that and stop the cycle of abuse. We have to teach those who are illiterate. I think we can all think of countless ideas of things that we have to do in a broken world as Christians. And yeah, it's a big order, but God never said it was easy to follow him either. We have a lot to do, and the one thing we can't do is give up. I would like to have us brainstorm for a while on some ideas of how we as individuals, either through career or on a volunteer basis, and a lot of what I'm talking about has to be done on a volunteer basis, because the nature of most careers, there's so much you can do in your career, but you can't necessarily do all these other things that also need doing. And I'd like to suggest that in structuring this brainstorming, there are three types of ways we might be working to change the world, one of which is one-on-one. And I'll give one example and then ask for more. One-on-one would be family or individual act. Namely, I might take in as a foster child, a mentally retarded child who parents did not want them, and it would be institutionalized child otherwise, and we therefore, out of our love, take them in. You've heard stories of families who take in 15 or 20 foster children over the years, and they have a household full of 8 kids. I'm just impressed so much because the amount of love and the amount of effort that goes into them. You see these TV movies, it's really moving stuff when you see the families that do this and care that goes into that. That would be an example of a one-on-one family or individual act that you can do. Number two would be as a group, perhaps a social service agency. As a church, we have Lutheran Social Services, and they do all kinds of things from helping battered women to helping refugee resettlement. And those, of course, rely on individuals too, but it's acting together not as one person, but as a group. And the third type of change would be as a society. And that's what I want to focus a little bit more on than the rest. As a person who professionally is involved in the field of politics, I'd like to suggest that this is a much needed and underutilized role that we as Christians and as citizens have as part of our vocation. We don't do enough of that. All of these three types of things, the individual, the group, and the societal change, are all very important, but the societal change is important for two ways that the others are not, and therefore I'm going to make a case that I think that's very important. One of which is it's on a grander scale. Obviously, a one-on-one act helps. If we take in a foster child, that helps one mentally retarded child, one disabled child, one homeless child to have a loving home, and it's critically important, and there's no way we can underestimate that. But on the other hand, if we allow in the political spectrum programs that help such people receive dignity, if we allow them to be cut way back or eliminated, or policies that actually hurt those people, we're affecting in any state or at the national level many times thousands of such children. And the fact that they don't all have loving foster homes, they may need these things even more. So the scale is much larger. If we are providing illiteracy training one-on-one, or we volunteer in a community education program to teach illiterate adults, we help 2-3 people a year, perhaps, in literacy training. And if we do it on a societal level, we can affect millions of illiterate adults. And so I'd suggest one way that the political arena is very important is that it changes things often on a much larger scale. The other way is that in some cases it's the only means for change. In bringing peace to the world, there's no way I as an individual, no matter what, I mean, acting as an individual, can bring peace between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, between our nation and any other nation. I as an individual can't do that. I have no power to do that. The only way I have of doing that is by working through our government, through international relations, through the political system to try and change that. You can say, yes, you can go to the Soviet Union, make friendships between the people, but what that, the purpose of that is, the end result of that is to try and make our governments more sympathetic, make the people pressure their governments into being more sympathetic to each other. So all those actions, the only way international peace can be achieved is in effect through political action. Maybe it has to come from pressure from the people, but nevertheless, societal change comes through the political system. So the two reasons I'd argue that we have to be, as Christians, involved in politics, and I know that brings controversy because, well, which side should we be on any issue? But the two reasons we have to be involved in is, one, it often can occur on a much grander scale, and number two, it's often the only way we can achieve such a change. But now I'd like to get to brainstorming for a minute, and again, I will want to focus on the societal types of changes, but I want to first start out with the individual and group kinds of things. And I think I've given one or two examples, and I don't mean to say working in, working with refugee groups, working with this group, working with, I'm not so interested in the exact issue you're working on, the type of problem you're addressing, but how you're addressing it. Are you working, are you taking in a foster child? Are you doing something else? I'd like you to come up with some of the ideas, though. First of all, the individual type action, individual or family type action. Can I have some ideas?
John, that green's a little hard to see. You want to use that black one.
Thank you. That says individual. I think this is drying out too, but we'll try it.
I'll get you another one.
If we need it, okay? Any ideas? Things that you can do one-on-one.
Well, a lot of people are into the loaves and fishes programs, you know, and various, I don't know. That's
can I put that as a group one?
Or yeah, it's okay. It's individual.
All of these things are going to be individual actions, but those would be through a group. Mm-hmm. It's not a real clear distinction either, but maybe I'll give one more example, and that would be a big brother, big sister type thing. Well, that is through a group, but let's call that an individual action, because I'm going and I'm meeting one-on-one with somebody else. And if the group didn't, the only thing the group does is facilitate the connection between the two of us. I'll suggest a big sister program type of thing. Okay, yes?
Transporting people who cannot drive to the hospital or anything that they need to go to.
Volunteer transportation, okay, that's...
Reading books onto tape for people with limited eyesight.
You're manning a hotline.
Books reading, okay. For sight impaired, okay. Okay.
Tutoring the illiterate, somebody who can't read.
Tutoring, now I just missed one, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, working on a hotline for
okay.
bad women or things like that.
The visitation for nursing home.
Okay. Let me slow down just
a
second.
Sorry.
The hotline type of idea, again, that's where you're available. Often those things have counseling when somebody's, suicidal types of people. You end up, I've seen some programs where you get 20 hours of training or so, and then when somebody calls you in a suicidal situation, very lonely or something, they need somebody to talk to. You volunteer that way. What was the next one?
Becoming a friend. They have a program, you become a friend with one person in a nursing home, then you visit that particular person. Nursing home.
Visit.
Friend, they visit. Or
nursing home. Yes, just being a friend, in effect.
As a neighbor to shut in.
Be a friend, okay. Be a friend to nursing home, shut-ins, okay. Any other ideas?
Volunteer at a nursing home. There are many things that you can do.
Okay, I'll suggest that would be, again, a group one. Volunteer for long-term housing, long-term care housing. Any other that one, again, I hope you see that, in effect, the nursing home is providing a service, a social service to people who need that service, and I, as an individual volunteering there, am, in effect, doing it there. Whereas I think these are kinds of things where it's more me with one person or a family with one person.
And is tutoring there?
Tutoring, yes. We have tutoring specifically. The person said illiterate adults, but I'm sure tutoring all kinds of...
I think they have a foster grandparent.
Yes, that's a program. That's, in effect,
for
in that case...
people don't have grandparents.
Right. That case, in effect, is being a friend here. We've suggested a lot of things there. Befriending somebody who, not necessarily lonely, but shut-ins, nursing homes, and here are kids who don't have grandparents.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Anything else? I mean, there are clearly a lot more, but I don't know that we need to spend a lot more time on this either. But all of these are things, and I think all of these are things that you don't do for a living. These are not your career-type vocation. These are vocation, part of your calling that you might do in your spare time. This clearly gives an example, and I'm sure if we sat here for another hour, we could think of a lot more. Next category... we had one was volunteering in nursing home. Somebody had another one earlier.
Loaves and fishes.
Loaves and fishes type of thing. Okay, for those, that in effect is a program where churches get together in Minnesota and they volunteer various days of the week in which they will provide. It's a soup kitchen type of thing for people who don't have food.
Meals on Wheels.
Meals on Wheels is a good one. That again is kind of a... it shows how blurred the distinction is, because here you're meeting with people one-on-one, but it's very clearly a program providing meals to people.
Having Lord's Acre in our community, the people who have gardens bring things each Saturday, and those of us who don't have gardens go and then donate the money to the Hunger Fund.
Okay, so in effect, food supply, food shelf type of thing, whether it comes from garden, in effect, here we have some hot meals provided to people 1 day a week or 3 days a week or something, congregate dining type programs, or your food shelf types of things, whether it's from fresh produce or what?
Canned goods. Well, they have what they call a snow cap in Portland, or
okay.
cap
community yes.
action programs where they feed There's people who need food.
Okay.
There's the Lutheran Church in San Francisco is involved in a night street program.
Street
program? They have certain people, and it's all organized, people on the street with walkie-talkies all night to
help reduce crime, I mean?
Well, okay. And to help anyone in need.
Anybody in need, any victims, I see. Street program, I'll call it. Okay. How about open up a new area, like maybe programs for people who are mentally ill. Social service agency, I I'll put down social service agency in general, and obviously that that covers just hundreds of things.
It mentioned in the bulletin board about Mary Witt that she was with a compass, evidently that, and she was working with schizophrenics.
Yes, that's a program specifically designed to deal with people with mental illness, I gathered from reading it as well, and so on.
Help-run self-help groups.
Self-help groups. Help people to help themselves. Perhaps job counseling things.
Prison auxiliary.
Visit prisoners.
Befriend prisoners or from the outside. From the outside, yeah.
All denominations have voluntary services as part of their home mission projects, and you can volunteer to help in homes, colleges, Heifer Project, Habitat for Humanity, all of those, Bread for the World.
So in other words, in effect, that one might be an agency that in effect directs individuals into both of these types of projects. A volunteer assistance type of thing that channels volunteer coordination type programs. Coordination. I don't know if you can read my writing. I'm trying to be neat.
That's very much like Holden here, where they might be electricians or mechanics or secretaries or whatever.
And Minnesota has a retired senior RSVP, retired senior volunteer program,
that's
which
different.
Steers the same kind of thing.
There was a woman here, I think, several weeks ago that was telling about a, and had slides of a Ronald McDonald home in either, was it Bozeman or Billings, where they keep the house going for people who have family in the hospital.
Yes, Minnesota has a number of things like that too. Sort of when you have a child with cancer in the hospital, where do you, and the parents are from out of town, where do they stay maybe months at a time?
They have a hospice program too, connected with hospitals. Mm-hmm.
Okay, hospice program. And those are usually volunteer type church run things.
Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Those are also, yes. Very clearly, Al-Anon. Those are very clearly addressing chemical dependency problems.
How about Lutheran World Relief? We made over 100 quilts a year for
Lutheran World Relief. Those are programs where you're in effect helping hungry people or homeless people throughout the world.
Yeah, or Red Cross or any of those.
Red Cross, yeah, that's
Salvation Army.
There's also Church World Service, which is in
okay. Yeah, those are all
World Relief.
Yeah, all of those types of groups provide hunger and development assistance type of thing, and it's not just feeding the hungry, but it's also helping them in self-help development projects, helping them get jobs and so on.
Church is sponsoring refugees.
Okay. Yes, refugee resettlement, and again, that can be also an individual thing, because I know when our church did it, they needed families to work one-on-one with the families and help them in job placement and so on.
Sanctuary,
that's where somebody, there's right in the other room, we've got a woman who had to come from El Salvador for political reasons. Her life was endangered, and we'd be hearing her story if you weren't in here. So, but that was through the church's being willing, and again, in that case, it's a that one is somewhat of a, it can be a political statement. The church doesn't mean it. The main purpose of it is to take care of somebody who's in need, but on the other hand, it says, hey, we should watch how our policies are reacting to certain, if the repressive government tends to be on one political philosophy, we take their people in. If it's from another one, we sometimes don't want to admit that there's repression. So,
would you consider anything like Peace Corps from the government?
Peace Corps, yeah. In effect, that's a government type of one, but it's a group agency helping people. Let's see, I had one on the tip of my own tongue I'm missing right now, but...
How about working on social issues like anti-nuclear?
I will suggest that that is a political one, which I want to get to in just a second. Maybe I better get to that right now because our time is moving. Anyhow, these are all, it shows, I mean, a lot of these things, they help a person one-on-one, and you need intensive volunteer time on them, and it's very valuable. I don't think anybody can argue there's anything more valuable than doing these. Likewise, here you're multiplying your efforts. It's not just one person, but many individuals working together to accomplish all these types of programs. And again, great service to people. The difference between these and the one you just suggested, I'm going to have to erase these because I don't have a big enough board, or I write too big or something. But it's clear that there are all kinds of, I'm going to start by erasing just one column, all kinds of things we can do one-on-one and as groups to make change that help individual lives. But now let's get to the societal type changes. And I will suggest here that political involvement can be broken down into about three types of actions, one of which is direct involvement. Perhaps running for office yourself, working for somebody's campaign, voting, all those things are direct political involvement and perhaps the most direct way to make a change. The next type of thing would be lobbying those who are in office. Given the fact that any change, somebody said working in the nuclear freeze movement or something like that, in effect, the purpose of such an organization is not, last week they had a Ruth Young Dawn Nelson film in which she and a number of other Christians formed a little blockade for the Trident submarine. They knew perfectly well they had no way of stopping the Trident submarine, which is several blocks long with these little motorboats. They knew that. Their purpose was not to physically block this thing from coming into port and stop it from working. Their purpose was to make a political statement to those in power or to other citizens for the purpose of changing government policy. And the three ways of getting it would be, one, direct political action, namely running for office yourself or voting or working for somebody else's campaign. Number two would be lobbying those already in power. You could argue that that anti-Trident submarine protest was directed to those in power in part, namely saying, we think this is wrong, we feel so strongly, we're risking our lives, we're risking arrests, we're risking many things to tell you, question what you're doing. So that's lobbying people in power. Writing letters is another example. And finally, educate others of how to do the same two things, namely to get politically active themselves or to lobby those in power. Those three types of things. And again, the first one was arms race concerns group type of thing. I don't know. That would include nuclear freeze type of thing, perhaps Lutheran Peace Fellowship, things like that. And which of those things would you say that does? I already said it clearly helps by lobbying those in office. It's trying to make a statement to them. Does it do anything else?
Makes people aware of the problem.
It helps educate others, fellow citizens. How about other types of political involvement we can have?
Righteous congressman.
Writing letters, okay.
Bread for the World.
Writing letters, and that would be, okay, either as individuals, we hear about something in the newspaper or at church or somewhere, we write a letter, or as a group, and Bread for the World was just given as an example of that. That's a group that provides information to you and organizes letter writing efforts. Other types of political involvement, or societal change, political involvement types of things.
Working for or supporting groups like Greenpeace, they're involved with ecological problems.
I think I see what I'm doing here would get us into a discussion of various types of issues. I'm going to put political concerns groups or something like that, which would mean political concerns, because I want that arms race type of group. In other words, you're joining a group that is involved in this. You're suggesting an environmental group like Greenpeace or Sierra Club or something. Somebody suggested earlier groups concerned about the arms race. So in other words, joining a political concerns group, which in those cases is a, maybe we should break that down a little bit and suggest that those groups, some of those like Greenpeace, does direct civil disobedience. They blockade a port to try and stop a whaling vessel from going out. Some of the peace groups tried to block the Trident submarines. Direct civil disobedience, we will suggest, is one method. What other types of things do those groups do?
Some of them have lobbies.
Some of them lobby, okay. Presumably meaning you're, by joining the group and you're contributing, you're paying for an effective professional lobby at, in Washington or in state capitals or internationally.
AARP and Common Cause set up special numbers through the telephone companies where you can send telegrams.
Okay.
To Congress and...
Okay, so like writing letters, it's another one, phone calling or telegrams. Phoning or telegrams to politicians. And that's also, yes, it's usually organized through a group, a political concerns group. But any other things you can think that political concerns groups do?
I think it's important to make a statement about the fact that you are joining yourself to an international cause.
Okay.
And that's really the only way sometimes that you can.
So in other words, not appealing just as U.S. citizens being involved, but an international effort maybe.
Amnesty?
Pardon me?
Like Amnesty International?
Yes.
Well, I'm talking more in environmental, but it could be nuclear, like getting together with other groups, like sending... Seattle has a group sent over to Tashkent in Russia. That was our sister city. So we were working internationally for peace that way, outside of the government.
So in effect, and somebody else suggested Amnesty, I think they both would fall into that category. Mm-hmm. You're working not just as American citizens to lobby the U.S. government, but partly what I think I'm hearing on from two of you is we're kind of, let's work with people from other countries that add something more, like now, hey, we've got to get in line with the rest of the world, we've got to cooperate with them. We as citizens are, why don't you as a government?
Yeah.
And Amnesty International does that. That's basically a letter writing thing, but it's an international one, so.
Like Witness for Peace, would that fit under this?
Sorry. Witness for Peace would be, yes, I will, I don't want to write the name of it down, but that may fall under both international efforts because it is an attempt to get, in effect, it is an attempt to pressure the U.S. government through international effort to stop, to develop peace in Nicaragua. So I'll consider that direct, it's not civil disobedience because it's a lawful action, but it is, you might call it direct action and international efforts combined. Other things?
A lot of the political concerns group also hit the media as far as television, radio.
Educate through media, okay. Anything else?
And through literature.
And literature, okay.
I know of an artist who was doing some cartoons, and he had a person go into a factory, and he was checked by security. He walked to his laboratory, and he made a bomb, and then he walked out of the factory and went to evidently where there was a cannon, and a soldier put the bomb in the cannon, and the cannon exploded, and a dove came out.
So educate through art. Let's say that's the end of the group type actions. But yeah, some people who have special talents in art.
How about Doonesbury?
That's cartoonist. That's art.
Every day.
Betty Olson this afternoon or this morning in a talk on women artists showed one picture really moving to me. I believe it was Carol Kollowitz, or I'm not sure the exact name, but a German artist active in Germany throughout the two world wars. And there's a picture, a very moving picture of of a crying woman and little kids, one or two grabbing at her apron, one holding a baby, who both of whom are crying, and she said the title of the painting was Being Informed or something like that, being told that somebody had just been killed. Mm-hmm. A very powerful piece type of thing. You see the painting, the sketch, and it just moves you. Oh, you realize the human agony that goes behind war. That's very clearly a sample of an artist using art to bring peace, or therefore it's political education through art. Other types of things. We don't have many...
staffing the headquarters for a candidate that you want.
Okay, volunteer work. Let's see, we're getting volunteering for candidate. That's getting into the direct political action thing. Running for office yourself, that's what I chose to do. Run for office.
Voting.
Voting is an easy thing to do. Obviously, to be an informed voter takes more work, but it's something we all have a responsibility to do. Vote.
The Great Decisions Program is one way, I think, that you can have an indirect impact on societal change, because those ballots do go in and apparently do have some impact.
In effect, let me phrase that as to a couple new types of things in here. I'm going to wipe out this so we can just leave the center column. I don't know if I need to. No, maybe I'll just erase it. Save some time. Your suggestion was, in effect, what you're saying is by voting on issues on a questionnaire, whether it comes from a group like Great Decisions or whether it comes from a legislator sending out a questionnaire, it's similar to a petition, I will argue. You are telling your opinion, often by checking a box, mailing in a postcard, signing a petition. I will call that one petition or survey type of thing. Another example that follows very close to that, so I'm going to suggest it myself, is writing letters. I'll suggest, I forgot we already had writing letters, I will put that up, is very similar. We've got phoning, telegrams, writing letters, petitioning. Those are ways of directly lobbying elected officials. Are there other ways?
Tax refusal.
Refusal to pay taxes.
I know, it's much harder. You didn't ask for easy answers.
There are a number of types of groups that refuse to pay taxes. I'll give two examples. One is Posse Comitatus, and some of the groups that say the U.S. government has no right to collect any taxes, and they refuse to pay them, and they arm themselves, and the sheriff comes to collect, and they blow them away. That's a group I will not suggest is a political protest group. It's its own independent government, which is in effect protesting. They're refusing to accept the authority of our government. You're suggesting, I presume, more like people refusing to pay taxes for political reasons.
Right.
And as such, what would you say that falls into? Civil disobedience, clearly, because you're breaking the law. And which of those three categories would you say it falls into, or how many of them would you say?
All three.
Okay.
Because it's something individuals do and is very often coordinated through groups and has a direct impact.
But I mean, where does it, among the political changes, okay. It's not direct political action because you're not running for office or voting or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would suggest it might be both of the other two. Mm-hmm. One, you're telling direct decision makers through civil disobedience, you don't like the decisions, you don't like the way they're spending money. The Lutheran Peace Fellowship has a number of members who refuse to pay taxes for the military portion of government, and they often will withhold that money and give it to charitable organizations or just set it in a separate bank account, knowing that the courts will come after them. Eventually they'll have to pay it, but they're not paying it willingly. So it's one is it's informing public officials, and the other it's educating other members of the public. Okay, how about other direct lobbying ways? One, you could visit somebody, visit your elected officials. Anything else you can suggest?
You could write to the president for what that's worth.
Writing the president, I don't want to specify who we're writing to, just elected officials in general. How about other, who else can you write to besides elected officials? Letters to the editor?
Yeah, to the public there.
To the public, yeah, you're writing open letter to the public through a letter to the editor or newspaper editorial column type of thing.
You can also write articles, not necessarily letters.
Yes, editorial types of things. Opinion pieces. Any other kind of thing? Let's see if
attend meetings that you see are pertinent to changes in your city or community.
Speak out at meetings, I assume.
School board and that type of thing.
Speak out at meetings.
You could join a speaker's bureau or sponsor forums yourself.
Okay, speak out at meetings or go to attend, either set up forums as a group or get invited to other groups and speak on behalf of the issue you're concerned about. Any other suggestions? The other types of things, if you want to get into this kind of thing, besides volunteering for candidates, you can contribute to candidates, which I would suggest is more often nowadays a function of political concerns groups, and not just public interest types of concerns groups, but more often lobbying groups for private business or any kind of concern that deals with government. Industry of every kind has lobbyists that contribute money and that are lobbying directly, but individuals can do that kind of thing too. This is a long enough list. What I'd like to suggest again, and I think in discussing this as we've gone on, want to watch the time so we have a few minutes for discussion. Some of the things we've done here were through a political concerns group, and I tried to sort out some, though this got kind of messy. Groups can do direct civil disobedience, and we've had several examples of that. They can lobby. Some of the groups combine the lobbying as a paid professional lobbyist of the group and individuals lobbying through letters and phone calls. I think Common Cause does that, Bread for the World does that. A lot of groups combine the two efforts. They have their own professional lobbyists who talk about the details of the issues to members of Congress, try and line them up, try and keep the group informed, a two-way street between elected officials, and then they also have lobbying from the grassroots level. They inform their members and the members do it. So many of these things are done by political concerned groups, and then others are done by us as individuals.
One thing that we haven't mentioned is being a support for people who are involved in civil disobedience, whether it's raising money to help people who have their money taken by the IRS, or whether it's taking care of kids because their parents have been arrested for protesting. There are a lot of ways that people can and need to be involved in supporting the people who engage in civil disobedience.
I know this isn't very legible because I just wrote civil obedience before and nobody... Maybe you were too polite, but I wrote civil obedience. Civil disobedience, support for those who are doing such things. Now, in terms of how, the other thing I wanted to do before opening it up for discussion, and it's kind of discussion as we go as well, is to talk about the effectiveness of these. And one thing I would suggest is one who has chosen the direct political involvement route, which is obviously the most time-consuming, and it means you, in many cases, running for local school board is something you can do in the midst of your other career. Or in retirement or something else, but some of these other things, running for office obviously takes a lot of time. Voting doesn't take that much, volunteering for candidates, somewhere in between. I'd suggest that in many ways, while the most long-term effect, to change a U.S. Senator, you may have to wait 6 years to even have a chance, and at that it may be an uphill chance. But while that's the longest term of these types of things, it's probably the most effective. If you put somebody into office who you agree with, it's a whole lot easier than sending hundreds of letters to somebody who disagrees with you and having them say, well, yeah, but I disagree. So I would argue that the more direct you can be in the political process, the more effective you'll be. So I would suggest that might be first in effectiveness, and then the other two I wouldn't suggest are one more than the other, but they both complement each other. One of which, the phoning, the lobbying, the writing letters, the petitioning, the visiting, all those sorts of things designed to change public opinion are all, they're not going to be effective to somebody who is outright opposed to your position. If they feel they want to vote for some bill and you absolutely oppose it and you send them thousands of letters, if they, unless you can convince them they're going to lose their job and they're so scared about getting beaten in the next election, because of that, they're not going to change. Likewise, you send letters to somebody who's already supporting the position, it doesn't change them. What you hope it does is firm up their support and keep them there. But the place where it has the most impact is on those who are kind of in the middle on it. Somebody who is not already firmly determined to oppose it. They see arguments on both sides, or they personally feel in opposition to you, but you know, not real strongly, and if they hear a lot of constituents saying one thing, they're going to switch. And so, as one who sees all these phone calls and visits, what I'd suggest the most effective are the ones that clearly show the most concern. A petition, I could take a petition out on the lawn out there, and I could do two things that, by wording them carefully and so on, I could have them say virtually the opposite thing, and I could get a long list of people who support either one. Because when you hit people with petitions, they don't always have time to read it carefully. So people sign petitions. To me, that doesn't mean a whole lot. It doesn't show a real deep commitment. So it doesn't sway me much. Somebody sends in a postcard, dear Senator, fill in the blank. And it's from some lobbying organization. That takes a little more commitment. They got to paste the postage stamp on, unless the lobbying group went so far as to do that. It shows a little bit of commitment, but not any real thinking on their part. And so, yes, it shows that they have that position, but I'd suggest that's not a whole lot more effective. Then when you start getting to somebody who actually takes the time to call, or more importantly, to write a personal letter, I oppose this thing because this and this. What's your stand on it? Can you let me know? That kind of thing, somebody took some time. They cared enough. It's really hard to get people. Only 5-10% of the public ever writes any public official. By that time, you know it's somebody who really cares about something. And I'd suggest it's a lot more effective. Somebody who stops by to visit you. Visiting your congressman, it means you're going to talk to a congressional aide, but still, it shows some real concern. Visiting your state legislator, depending on the time of the year, you're going to talk to them directly. That, like writing letters and to a lesser extent phone calls, have a real impact. Somebody, telegram was suggested earlier. I would argue against that unless you've got a lot of money and you, telegrams have a little more impact than a form letter, but on the other hand, it doesn't show, it shows some money went into it, not necessarily personal commitment because they say so few things. And some people count these. Some politicians, you know, if they get, they don't count them one for one, but if they get a stack this high in favor of something and a stack this high in opposition, if they feel kind of neutral, they're going to go with the majority opinion. But the other thing you can do is sometimes by writing a letter with your reasons, you might give some new reason they hadn't thought about. I've got to say that's happened numerous times. Somebody will write me a two-page letter, and I'll often have a staff member read it first and summarize it, but I usually read through the whole thing too. And hey, that's an interesting reason, and it informs you. And especially at the state level and to a lesser extent the federal level, it will inform staff members there. And so if you do have good reasons, don't be sure that that person's already heard of them. It's not always the case. You may be providing new information. Those are the most powerful ways of changing through lobbying. Finally, the educating others, of which civil disobedience, of which letters to the editor, editorials, forums, all those sorts of things are designed to get other people, your fellow citizens, to do one of those two things, either to be directly politically involved or to join you in lobbying. And I'd suggest that That is a way of multiplying your efforts. I can serve as one volunteer for a candidate, or one candidate, or one voter, or one person to write letters to the to my congressman, or I can inform, I can get my neighbors excited about the same thing and multiply my efforts. That's why education is so important. And then what I'd suggest is looking at that, your main goal, with civil disobedience. Many groups that I very much share sympathies with, I often wonder, are they making friends or enemies? Because if you're trying to inform, that's a real concern you have to do in any of these things. If you write a letter to the editor that's real nasty, and you turn off your neighbors and they think, what a jerk, you've hurt your cause. If you've done some sort of civil disobedience that the public doesn't understand, I'd say the best example of civil disobedience that worked, the most clear example of it working, is in the civil rights movement, where Martin Luther King and his followers would go there and people would throw bricks at him. I mean, it's gross. They very high risk, very dangerous, and yet just to be human beings, see their on nationwide television, see them stripped of their dignity with people sending police attack dogs on little kids and fire hoses on adults. That kind of thing just shocked the nation that people would actually do this to people. Why were they marching? Because they couldn't even vote. They didn't even have full citizenship power. It shocked us as a nation. They got their way. Now when you move to other types of things, sometimes they seem futile and we can argue whether they're effective or not, but the thing you have to do in civil disobedience is make sure that along with it that you're getting your point across, not the opposite of your point. And so that's one case, the same thing with writing letters to the editor, same thing with speaking at meetings. If I come to a meeting and yell at you about how awful something is, I may make you angry at my cause. You may be somewhat on the edge. And instead of getting you to support it, I may make you oppose it. So I'd suggest that's the way we have to look at it, because the end result is you have to get others to join you in your efforts. And finally, reminder that this whole process is very frustrating, because especially at the federal, the national, international level, things move so slowly. You can be upset about things moving the wrong direction. You want to slow that down or reverse the direction. It may not happen in your lifetime. That's, I said at the beginning, nobody ever said this was easy. But when you do get those changes, it doesn't affect one person. It affects the whole world or millions of people. And so it is very rewarding. But with that, I'll open it up, and you've already got a handle.
I don't want to be a pessimist, but you know, I am getting to the point where I'm very discouraged about the quality of people that we have in federal office. And it's as if, well, you have to have money, and if you have real strength of character, you probably won't be elected, because you're going to have to kowtow to all these interest groups. And you know, I get to the point where I feel very discouraged about even going to the polls to vote. Now, is what can we do to encourage people with real integrity to run for high political office and then make sure that they get in?
There's no easy answer. We have about 5 minutes, and I don't want to spend it all on one question. But clearly, there are people of highest integrity in public office who will do what they think is right, even if it's going to end their political career, because they believe in it strongly, and they don't do it, and they don't cater to the lobbyists that give them the most money, and therefore they don't get the contributions they need. All those sorts of things affect it, and so it does make it tough for somebody who would say politicians aren't honest or crooked. I mean, it's not a clear line. It's kind of, how much do you pay attention to certain things? Are you really conscientious or only a little bit conscientious? And to get the people of the highest character into office and so on, you have to look beyond the nasty 30-second television spots that either say, so-and-so's a great guy, got a nice family, what a wonderful person, or the ones that so-and-so voted against this, and that's going to hurt you. I often like looking at, does somebody ever appeal to something other than your greed? How they're going to lower your taxes or make your something, but how they're going to look at somebody else's interest. Bread for the World I think is very effective, because it's one of the few times where citizens actually write the legislator about something other than how they are being ripped off, but how they care about somebody else. So what you appeal to, I'd argue, if a politician appeals to the right things in people, they hear, they get affirmed in that, and we have to help do that.
But generally that politician, it will gain votes because he was able to get a certain defense contract for for Boeing's, for instance,
and therefore,
in Washington, or get a port for some place in Oregon that that needs it for the employment and that kind of
thing. I don't want to argue against your pessimism, because it may be an uphill battle, but what I want to suggest is, first of all, we as Christians believe very strongly in hope. There are two responses. If you think, hey, this is an uphill battle, it looks like we got to move a mountain, and how in the world are we going to do that? You got two responses. One is the patience, and we've got hope. Looks like a tough battle. It may last beyond my lifetime. I'm gonna start chipping away at that mountain. Or the other one is, there's no chance. They're all a bunch of crooks. It's a lousy system, and cynicism and apathy.
No, I'm not. I'm not suggesting.
No, I know you're not. But I want to just suggest pessimism. Pessimism often implies no hope. Frustration with hope, I'll suggest, is what you need. Anyhow, I don't mean to take any more time on that. Other points of things you want to pursue or clarify or challenge? You're free to disagree. I mean, I want to make it clear if you feel some way that I'm not saying something right or fair. Challenge.
I have a problem with civil disobedience. I guess just because I've always been opposed to it. I think of a law as a law. People should live within the law. And to get attention when they ruined a couple of buildings on the campus of the University of Wisconsin, that was just terrible. And they may have accomplished their purpose. They got attention, but several people went to prison. And even the same as not paying your taxes in proportion to the money your taxes that goes for defense, I think those people are wrong.
Well, let me suggest, as one who has never, I don't know if I've ever done anything illegal for civil disobedience purposes, I would suggest civil disobedience can be things that, first of all, can be for the wrong motives, or it can be for the right motives. It can be an appropriate action or inappropriate. I will suggest that there are times when civil disobedience is clearly appropriate. And that may not be just because you're frustrated at how slowly things are moving, therefore you do something violent, like what happened at University of Wisconsin. Bombing buildings is not an appropriate response, no matter how frustrated you are. And it doesn't accomplish your purpose. It gets attention, but it gets bitter attention. People oppose you. But Martin Luther King, I will suggest, masterfully, whether he was the brains who thought of this whole way of doing it, or whether it just happened to work out so well, I will suggest that not only was there real frustration and legitimate frustration about 100 years after emancipation and 14th Amendment that blacks still did not have the right to vote, that there was a very clear reason for doing what he did, and it was a peaceful civil disobedience. First of all, it was peaceful. The only people who got hurt were the people committing civil disobedience. The only people who suffered were those committing civil disobedience. And yet, I would argue that it was very much worth their while to do that, because it changed laws. Now you don't have black and white drinking fountains in the South. You have, to the point where somebody in one of the other talks the other day mentioned Birmingham Chamber of Commerce at some point in the late 60s saying, look, we're hurting our state. We're hurting our community by polarizing between blacks and white. At some point, it enlightened the people in the local community, not just through federal law changes, but also, look, the rest of the nation thinks Alabama's a bunch of jerks, and they changed. And I would suggest that that's a case of civil disobedience working. The one of University of Wisconsin and anti-war movement days, I'd suggest, is a clearly inappropriate response, and therefore that's one of the cautions about it. I'm not encouraging people to break the law. I can understand why people do, and sometimes I think it's justified, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I like their methods and don't. Do you have any further comment on that, or somebody else?
Comment, if someone's in a public position, such as Dean Erdahl of the Southeastern Minnesota District ALC, withholding part of his taxes, which he did after much prayer, I'm sure, on his part, but nevertheless, it turned off a lot of church members to think that their bishop would do such an act. So in that case, he had to really consider his judgment before he did that.
And I'm knowing him somewhat, I'm sure he did do that, and I think reading, I've read one of his books, I think he very clearly is a person who spends a lot of time thinking. That's, I had a talk last week about, should the church be involved? Should the church take statements on political issues? You know, one hand, as Christians, we're called to respond in whatever way we, through prayer, think is appropriate to these. But on the other hand, and that means we may at some time risk offending another Christian.
Okay,
but
where does a public figure, consider his public position versus his private or personal?
He as an individual, in his case, had to consider that.
He's got a comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if you can even separate that.
You may not be able to. If I do something, am I representing my constituents or myself? You've got to be very cautious in doing such things, but I think your comment to me basically points out to somebody who chooses to do such a thing the caution they have to use in doing so. And particularly if it's a church leader or something, they have to be especially careful. But I would not argue that they should never do it, no matter how. I mean, if there's slavery in this day and age, if there were 10 years ago in the civil rights movement, church leaders did get involved. And I would suggest, while it did offend certain church members, 10 years later, we can look back 20 years later and say they were right. Whether we'll do the same, history sometimes is the judge of those things. I think it looks like it's time to quit. I'm going to be around yet tomorrow morning and be happy to talk further. Sometimes people feel more comfortable talking one-on-one and be happy to do that. But I hope this gives a little bit of guidance for the things. And one final thing, the Resource Center here has a packet. I'm not pushing it because I benefit in any way from it, but my wife pointed out that they have a package on advocacy letter writing, how to lobby, and it has sample letters and the types of things you ought to say in a letter, not focused on any type of issue, but if you're going to be doing it. They're selling them for 30 cents, and you can either pick them up in the Resource Center. I have some copies here if you want to pick them up here, but I just say that because it's a six-page thing full of information, and I looked through it, and it seems to have some very good ideas. So.
Thank you.